conform to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. There are seven stages of God's will. There is His providential will, His revealed will, and His secret will, His potential will, meaning only made possible with our cooperation. Then there is God's directive will, His permissive will, and His perfect will. Now, I'm not going to say anything about the first four, but I do want to speak a little while on the last three. God's directive will, God's permissive will, and His perfect will. David, as you remember, is on his face before the Lord, filled with sorrow. The hours of suspense and tension and anxiety were passing because of the condition of his son. The little one was lingering between life and death. During those anxious hours, David was on his feet before the Lord. Then the news came that God had taken the little lad to heaven. David arose. He washed his feet. He bathed, and he sat down to eat. Up until then, he wouldn't eat. But when he arose, washed his feet, refreshed himself, and sat down to eat, and it seemed as though a load had been lifted, and those tending the corpse could not understand David's action. Why, they said, David, while the child was alive, you fasted, you prayed, you wept. We couldn't speak to you. But now that the child is dead, why, it seems as though you're a different man. You seem relieved. David said, can I bring him back? I shall go to him. He shall not return to me. All hours of waiting and anxiety are over relative to our young brother. We cannot bring him back. He has gone, and thank God we shall go to him, those of us who are saved. He cannot return unto us. And now, God's will. I believe, as David profited from that experience in his life, God would have us to profit from what we have so sadly experienced in the last days. God directed this, meaning simply this, that God directs things as He directed the plagues upon Egypt. He directed those serpents to chasten His people Israel. He sent fiery serpents among them. He directed the storm to correct His wandering servant Jonah. Here is God directed here. God deliberately, intentionally doing something. That's His will. Now, none of us for a moment would think that what has happened was God's directed will. Not for a moment. But then there's God's permitted will. Meaning that God permitted something to happen. It wasn't God's directed will that Satan test Job, but God permitted that test at the hands of Satan. He permitted Job to be put into that position of testing and the trial. It was God's permissive will. God did not direct Satan to tempt our first parents, but He permitted Satan to enter the garden and to tempt him. In other words, what has happened, I firmly believe, has happened in God's permissive will. In other words, there's a way in which nature must take its course. And remember, the laws of nature are the laws of God. And if a Christian breaks the laws of gravity, he's going to suffer for it just like any unsaved person will. For the laws of nature are God's law. And nature must take its course. If there is a disease in your body, just because you are a Christian, God is not going to stop. When we violate certain laws, we must pay the price and suffer the consequences, just like an unsaved person. And so, Leon, but unto the uncertain footing that he did, And the result was, he fell. And the laws of gravity were broken, and you know the result. The same thing would have happened had a wicked, ungodly man been in the same position and done the same thing. There are those laws that govern God's universe. And the Christian will suffer if he violates those laws just as much as the unfaithful. And so, nature takes its course. When the waters of the flood were upon the earth, God could have reduced those waters and dried them up in a moment, but it took a whole year. As the waters assuaged, as they subsided, as they finally dried up from off the face of the earth. Nature taking its course. And so, we live, so much of us, so many of us, in God's permissive will. Isn't that tragic? In other words, it means, as in the case of Israel, God gave them their desire, but he sent leanness into their hearts. He permitted them to have what they want. And so often, it is the case with us, we insist on a certain course, we insist upon a certain thing, we try and press our demand, we force our will on the will of God. God, knowing that it's not exactly what he would have us do and be, yet he permits us to have it, that we may learn a lesson. And so, God gave them their request, but he sent leanness into their hearts. And it is true that we seem to spend so much of our time, so much of our life, in God's permitted will. What has happened? Takes me back, and especially when that hymn was given out, to my life. I used to go around with a young fellow by the name of Frank Norman, 5 years my senior. Frank and I were very close. We were very much alike. But Frank became interested in my sister, and she took him to the meetings at the chapel, and Frank was saved. When Frank found Christ, he and I talked. I wanted nothing of him. He used to go to the meetings all the time and began studying to be a missionary in Spain. All his evenings were spent studying the Word. And then, 4 years later, I found Frank. He was the first one I wanted to tell after my lover. Frank and I went back together, and we were brothers almost, not only spiritually, but almost physically. We were so attached to each other. Instead of him having the influence over me, which he should have done, being the elder, I, the younger, had the influence over him. He had never been hunting in his life, and I suggested to him that we go hunting. So we went, and he enjoyed it so much that finally he became enthused, and he said, "Now let's take some time off, and let's go hunting." He was neglecting his Saturday, reading his Bible, and we were going hunting. The outcome was that Frank Norman was shot at my side. He accidentally shot himself, and I caught him in my arms, and Frank Norman went to heaven. At his time, God revealed to me that he had a work for me to do. And there I learned the lesson that I've never forgotten. Frank's death was a message from God to me. Because he was forgetting the missing sheep. He had an uncle in New Zealand with a large sheep ranch. And he said to me, he said, "Let's work our way to the Pacific Coast." And then he said, "Take a trip across to New Zealand and work for my father, my uncle Robert, on that sheep ranch." God says, "No, I want Lester Wilson down in Georgia, in North Carolina, to preach my word." And he likely had a work for Frank to do. And so the result was that Frank was taken to heaven, and I learned my lesson. It was God who missed this. And we're only hoping that as a result of Leon's death, God will put his hand upon another young man and raise him up and use him for his glory. We don't understand these things. They're mysteries. Yet God permits them for his glory. God's perfect will. Now, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, and so on in verse 2, and be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, the that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And I want to say this carefully, I trust lovingly. Had our young brother been in God's perfect will, what has happened would never have. I believe he got into God's initiative. To be in God's perfect will is to be in constant fellowship with him. It is to be in the center of God's will. And I am convinced that our young brother been in God's perfect will, he would not have been saved. I believe had he gone before the Lord and prayed about the day before, asking God to do it, that he wanted the will of God, I believe it would have been otherwise today. It's when we get out of God's perfect will and get into his permissive will that trouble comes. Our trouble comes when we get into the path of disobedience. He said, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your body a living sacrifice. In the Old Testament, the sacrifices were placed upon the altar. But you remember there were some threshold in connection with that altar, and those threshold were to keep the sacrifice on the altar. You know as well as I know how difficult it is to keep the sacrifice on the altar. We come to the Lord, we commit ourselves to him on occasion, we seek him to yield and surrender, we put ourselves on the altar, we put ourselves in God's hand. But oh, is it sad that we allow ourselves to get off that altar? We have no question that our young brother time and time again on his knees before God would commit himself to the Lord, and no doubt knew something of being on the altar for God's reason. But the tragic thing is, he got off the altar. And I believe that's what happened. Had he remained in God's perfect way, things would have been different. Little did the conveners of this conference realize when they invited three speakers to this conference that the one who was going to give the most effective and the most fruitful minister was Leon, a boy of 16. But I don't think any minister from this platform, from Brother Howley or Brother Arthur or myself, has spoken as loudly as Leon did. To think that God could be this young man, this so minister to all our hearts. His ministry of death has spoken to sinners. And it has searched the saints. It has searched my heart deeper. It brought us face to face with eternity. His death has warned all of us that we know not the day of our death, and we cannot boast of tomorrow. I believe his death will serve as a warning in the future to others who may attempt the same thing. And that his death may prevent others from experiencing what he experienced. In many ways, I believe his death will be possible. Let us all take this tragedy to heart so that our young brother will not have died in vain. And I trust that each one of us will be exercised this morning about spending our lives not in God's permissive will, but in the very center of his perfect will.